We've been looking at climate change stories this week, and today we're going to zoom in on one statistic. By 2050, the World Bank predicts that climate change could create as many as 143 million climate migrants, people moving to new places to escape conditions that are making it difficult to live. To put that into context, that's double the number of refugees in the world today. And while that migration would be unprecedented, we have seen smaller movements because of climate before, and many times within the United States. Ed Ayers and Nathan Connolly are historians and hosts of the podcast Backstory. Welcome back, guys.
Thanks. Hey, Peter.
Now, I know you're both U.S. historians, but I'm going to ask you to stretch the limits of your scholarship here way, way back to long before we were ever a country. What was the first human migrations that we saw because of climate in North America?
Well, archaeologists tell us that you have, at least in the 12th or 13th century, Native Americans who are migrating because of massive droughts in the West and Southwest. And the Americas, of course, are being populated by people who are migrating from Asia. So we have no sense of all the ways in which climate was driving them in the first place. But even in those migrations in the 12th and 13th century, you have a very clear reliance on crops like maize, ways in which people are not able to rely on the consistency of the rains. I mean, decades-long droughts in some cases. And so these populations are being forced to move and to come into contact. And so you have the Zuni and the Hopi and the Mogollon who are moving through and trying to find new villages, in some cases moving along rivers and creating new moments of cultural contact, but at great stress. I mean, you're talking about thousands of people who are forced to move and relocate, oftentimes abandoning whole cities or civilizations. Some of those places that we now see as tourist attractions in the Southwest are these empty villages in the hillside. Some of those are a product of these large, massive migrations. Another side point of this, of course, when the Europeans arrive, many of them are migrants of a very related sort. I mean, they're fleeing certain kinds of hardship in Europe, and many of them are talking about, for instance, the abundant timber in places like North America and trying to find ways in which they can get a slightly more regular livelihood, given the deforestation that happened in Europe in the 18th and 19th century. And so there's going to be a constant relationship between mass migrations and concerns about the climate and sustainability.
And then once those Europeans got here and started establishing their own communities here, what happened? I mean, do we see similar things moving forward?
Well, we need to think about the relationship between climate and change is initiated by people as well. Mm-hmm. You could argue that the two of the worst things that have ever happened in American history are directly related to that process, which is the forced migration of a million people across the American South because the climate there enabled this new crop of cotton that tied back to Europe the way that Nathan was talking before. There's new industries that are driving it. And you would found that...
And you're referring to slavery. I mean, I'm sorry, just to be specific there, you're referring to
slavery. Yeah, slavery I'm talking about. And you would have seen, in many ways, the worst slavery in southern Louisiana in the sugar cane fields, which go up to the very boundary of where the climate will allow them to go, and in the rice fields on the Atlantic coast. So you see very finely attuned, really, to just a few degrees temperatures you were talking about before, about how you can have this forced migration of millions of people in slavery.
So I'm hearing a theme here that people tend to follow where the plants and the crops will go because, of course, that's how we sustain ourselves but also our economies. What about other reasons that people moved historically related to the climate?
Well, if you think about the large concern now around Atlantic storms, there again, there's a history to the ways in which hurricanes have forced all kinds of people to basically pull up stakes and relocate. I mean, this again has a kind of hemispheric impact. If you think, for instance, about some of the Atlantic storms that came through the Caribbean or even hit the Southeast in the early part of the 20th century, many of these were quite cataclysmic with really substantial effects. I mean, you think about a storm in 1917 that really is racking the Caribbean and forcing people in the U.S. to send remittances back. In the 1950s, you have a massive storm hit Jamaica that helps to spawn migration to England in that decade. And even in the United States, there's a huge hurricane in 1947, late September, that creates a huge problem of displacement in the southeast of the United States because largely the infrastructure isn't there. And this is a reminder to listeners to think about unnatural disasters, right? The Hurricane Katrina disaster in New Orleans was about levees breaking, for instance. And in the South in the 1940s, you had farmers who were being displaced. Folks who were relocated because of racial segregation statutes in the South had their whole homes relocated and then subsequently ripped up by massive hurricanes. You're talking about hundreds, in some cases, thousands of migrants of Atlantic storms because of discrimination and a lack of infrastructure even within the United States in the 1940s.
You know, we're talking about that even still today, especially as these hurricanes come up the coast. A lot of the conversation after those storms rip through and destroy communities is, should we rebuild right here on this coastline?
Right.
Again,
no, absolutely.
And it's, yeah.
Absolutely.
What's interesting is how much of that building is recent. From Virginia to Florida, from 1980 to the early 20th century, a quarter of all American population growth was along that Atlantic coast. And mm-hmm. another large part, of course, is in Texas, where you have everything's enabled by air conditioning, which is a post-World War II innovation. So the migration, voluntary and involuntary, is sort of creating, so to speak, a perfect storm where people mm-hmm. are moving to where the greatest vulnerabilities lie.
We've got to talk about the Dust Bowl, the 1930s, hundreds of thousands of Americans right. displaced at a very difficult time for the country during the Depression. And this was not just weather-related. It also had to do a lot with how Americans were interacting with the land.
So there was severe drought during the 1930s and wind erosion that was accompanied or really came on the heels of really inefficient irrigation techniques. And so anchored soil, you know, basically came up and was turned to dust. And you had over 100 million acres in Texas, Oklahoma, New Mexico, Kansas, and so forth, basically ruined as a result of, again, decades-long degradation. The crop losses alone were $25 million per day. That's in 1936 dollars. So you're wow. talking almost $450 million of loss every single day during the Dust Bowl in the 30s. Well, you have nearly 3 million people who leave the Plain States, most of whom go to California. And California itself begins to then enact a series of laws to basically restrict some of these migrants. In 1933, the Indigent Act in California actually made it a crime to bring indigent persons into the state. You have local attorneys trying to enforce it with verve, and it's not until the ACLU really fights back against this that you get a Supreme Court case in 1941 that actually makes it okay, makes it a law in America to not restrict interstate migration for poor people.
You're right. I'm thinking back to the Grapes of Wrath and the images of the family moving from their homes to the West Coast. They were definitely vilified. People were vilified. These migrants were not treated well. And it gives us a hint at what might happen in the future, doesn't it, when this happens, if it happens again.
Well, we need to remember, too, that one reason we have the Grapes of Wrath is that it was about white people moving, right? This is about poor indigent white people. We don't really have representations of people of other ethnic backgrounds who have been displaced and moved. So I think that it's interesting that that gives us something to think with, but it doesn't really reflect the big picture.
Well, I'm from the Southwest, and my family first moved there in the 1950s because at that time the weather was good, the air was clean, and now as I think about how the climate is changing in places like Arizona, Southern California, New Mexico, Colorado, there are wildfires, there are droughts that have literally lasted more than a decade. And I've been wondering, you know, when will people start to leave, but also when will people start staying put in other parts of the country and not coming to places in the Sun Belt? That's got to really affect the economies of a place and the identity of a lot of places.
Well, I grew up in South Florida, and, you know, Miami in a lot of ways is considered to be ground zero of what will be, you know, sea level raises and other kinds of climate concerns. And I've thought about whether or not I could go, you know, and make a snowbird migration like so many folks do in their old age to go back to Florida. So I wish I could say it wasn't a consideration. I mean, some of the projections that we've now seen coming out of these latest reports are saying as early as 2040, you're going to start to see unsustainable crises or irreversible crises in places like South Florida, again, Louisiana, the Gulf Coast. These places are going to be drastically compromised in terms of what the next generation or the generation after will be able to do. So I hope that we're not talking in historical terms about the place that used to be Florida or a place that used to be Louisiana. But there's a very real possibility that, you know, the entire country and really the world is going to have to make a dramatic shift to prevent that history from becoming an eventuality.
Ed, do you agree?
I do. As a mountaineer, it's one of the few cultural advantages I have. I'm from highland, but I think that it's hard for us to imagine just how massive these changes can be. And all we have to do is think back across American history to see how many millions of people have been moved by climate before.
I'm going to move in with you, Ed, if that's okay.
Ed Ayers and Nathan Connolly, hosts of the podcast Backstory. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.